That's very special.
First time.
That's a special event. Okay, Boker Tov to everyone. V'chol ha'mazinim. Read this week the Sedra of Mikesh. In the middle of the story, Vayhi Mikesh Nasei Elohim. After 2 years of additional incarceration for Yosef, that the episode of the of Parah's dreams and the Sarhamashkim, who had previously betrayed Yosef, so that worked itself out. Let's start with number one. The Medrash is in our Sedra, but it actually relates to an event at the end of last week's Sedra. V'lo zochar Sarhamashkim es Yosef v'yishkachehu. After all that Yosef had done for the Sarhamashkim, interpreting his dream in a favorable way, and then seeing himself restored, seeing the Sarmashim restored to his prior position, all Yosef did was ask the Sarmashim to help him. Kigunov Ganafti Meritzavrim, Vigampo Lo Sisi Muma, Kisamosi Vabor, that I was stolen, kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, meaning he was wronged then, and even here, they put him in the pit, in the dungeon. Here too, he hadn't done anything, and therefore he's innocent, and the Sarmashim can help him. Could the Sarmashim help him? Uzchartani, what was the pasuk that he told the Sarmashim to mention him to Paro?
Remember me.
Remember me. I'm trying to get the exact pasuk, but it's not in front of me now.
Mem Yudal.
Right. No, he actually said it twice. And Medrash says, Asher Gever Asher Sam Hashem Miftacho, Pasuk in Tehillim. Fortunate is the person who places his trust in God, Ze Yosef. Velo Fanoel Rehavim, and he did not turn to the arrogant, the Sate Chazav, and those who stray after falsehood. That's the end of the Pasuk. Who's that? Ayidei she'omer l'sar ha'mashkim z'chartani v'hizkartani. He said the language of remembrance. Mention me to Paro. Not once, but twice. Nitasaf lo shtei shanim. He had 2 years of additional imprisonment added to his cheshbon. Alright. Rabbi Yudin Amar Hamon Ribe Rav Ravoya Shem Sotim Achare Chazov. The many, Hamon, tens of thousands, myriads of people who stray after liars, falsehood. Oy lo lemishu boteach bahem. Woe to those who trust in them. So let's take the second, let's take this point first. What's the difference? So, Asher Gev Asher Sam Hashem Miftacho. Fortune is the person who places his trust in God, v'lo fanoel rehavim v'satei chazov, and he doesn't place his trust in those who are arrogant or those who purvey falsehoods. But the opposite of placing a trust in Hashem is not to place our trust in rehavim v'satei chazov. The opposite would be to place our trust in man altogether. The pasuk we say in the davening every day, right? Ashrei, you have a sitter in front of you. It's right after Ashrei. Well, now that I mention it, it pays to say it. Don't put your trust in Nedivim princes and man who has no ability to save you. The trust is only in Hashem. So, what's arrogant? What's strayers after falsehood? So the arrogant of people have their own interests. And man, by definition, is a self-interested creature, even a narcissistic creature at first. So therefore, a person who seeks favors or expects ultimate deliverance from a human being, it might happen, sometimes it does, can't betray you all the time, but if it does happen, it'll be in response to the self-interest of the beneficiary, some benefit that he gets from it, and not simply because he is a altruistic, right, a purveyor of chesed that does not come at any cost. Those are the arrogant. Arrogant person looks out for himself. He has his own interests. What satechazov, strayers after falsehood. Those are people who live in line with their own reality. As a liar is a person who creates his own reality. His own reality. All right? Of course, I mean, I'm not breaking any new ground here by saying it's typical of a politician, but suffice it to say that a person who thinks you can have universal health care and cut costs for everyone is living in his own reality. All right? That's satechazov. It's not just a liar. It's a person who strays after it, who seeks it, because the alternate reality comports with a preconception of how the world is supposed to be.
And it's tied with arrogance.
It's tied to arrogance as well. That's correct. Rehavim is satechazov. They both tie together, because the arrogant not only is only interested in himself, but in order to sustain that, he has to create his own reality. And so that's satechazov. And that happened here as well. The Sar HaMashkim, so you know, the Sar HaMashkim wasn't, translated in English as the cupbearer or the minister of drinks, which I guess some countries have to have. But the Sar HaMashkim was a security officer, head of security, just like the Sar Ofim was. Those are the people, that's like the Secret Service. Those are the people who have to defend the king, Paro. Because the one of the traditional ways of assassination in the ancient world was through food, poison, poisoning his drink, poisoning his meals. So the Sar Ofim and Sar HaMashkim were security officials. A person who's close to the king, close to the Paro, close to the president, that person develops a sense of arrogance, because you begin to identify with the person you're protecting as if you know him well, and we have this symmetry between the two. So that was the Sar HaMashkim. Especially once the Sar HaMashkim was restored to his post, then
before he forgot.
Now, Rav Yudin adds something that we should know in our day. Hamon ribe Rav Ravoya Shem Sota Machre Chazov, the myriads, tens of thousands of people who stray after falsehood. Here, Rehavim is a play on words. Rehavim Rav Ravoya, myriads. The many people who stray after the Sotei Chazov. Rav Ravoya here means Sarim. We have this in the Karibon, in the Zemer. Great ones. So there are numerous great people who, and nonetheless, they incline to falsehood. Whether falsehood is their own conception of reality, whether falsehood is Avodah Zarah, the creation of their own gods, they stray after that. And because they live in a completely false world, woe to those who trust in them. And of course, it's a problem. I mean, we're dealing with that now with the Iran situation. It's not surprising to anyone, the way the situation is unfolding. Who knows what will happen in a month or 6 months. But nonetheless, whenever anyone feels he can control reality, because he can make the oceans, stop flowing, and the air stop warming. What's that? Backwards, flow backwards, correct. So, no doubt he'll have a handle on how the Russia is able to do tshuva as well. But, woe to those who rely on them. Notice, it's not relying on the Russia. The Russia is the Russia. But those who think they know better, and because of the arrogance, the ravim, the satei chazov, the capacity to create your own reality, woe to those who rely on such a person. Here's the next question, though. What did Yosef do? What did Yosef do? He just asked for help. What's wrong with that? He made an appeal to the Sar HaMashkim, who now would be in a position to help him, to help him. So apparently, had he asked, it wouldn't have been that problematic. He asked twice.
Yeah, well...
Zhartani v'hizkartani.
Yeah, doesn't it say that somebody has to do their own
hishtadlis? That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. You have to do your own hishtadlis. What do you do wrong?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I did my question too.
That's a good approach. Yes, the answer I heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait,
Yosef became convinced of his ingenuity as well. All right, Yosef became convinced that he was going to orchestrate his liberation. And that's why he said it twice. He said it twice. In other words, Chartani, his Chartani, means that now it's under my control. I see an opening, and this is going to be the key that unlocks the door of the jail cell. That's a mistake, because we have to do our hishtadlus, but we have to realize as well that ultimate success comes only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what he missed out on. He didn't even say, Yirat Hashem. Mm-hmm. You know, God should give you the strength. Yosef thought he had now found a ticket to his freedom. And that was the mistake that he made. He was Pona El Rehavim V'Satei Chazav. And that mistake cost him another 2 years in prison, but of course made him a much humbler person. So in our Sedra, when he starts, when Paro eventually calls him, so Yosef says again and again, in one form or another, Elokim Yerashlom Paro. God is one. Elokim Pisrani. God has the solutions to the riddles. It's not me. He was told everything. He attributed everything to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And at that point, that's when he was ready to assume the role of his life. Okay. Let's look at number two. So we know that Paro dreams, can't sleep. Paro Cholem. He's involved in a dream. The dreams troubled him. Vayishlach, Vayikra, he goes out and he calls Kochar Tomei Mitzrayim, Kochar Chameho, he calls all the soothsayers, the astrologers, the prognosticators, meaning his leading advisors. None of them were able to assuage him. Rabbi Yeshua de Sichnin, Meshem Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Yeshua said, of Sichnin said, Sichnin's a town, ancient town of the Galil, Rabbi Yeshua said, in the name of Rabbi Levi, Posrim hayuoso, they had solutions. El shelo haya kola nichnas ve'oznov, but their voices did not penetrate his ears. Meaning what? They said things that made sense on the surface, but they didn't satisfy him. They didn't permeate his consciousness. What do they say? Rashi quotes as well. It's in part. Sheva paros atavos. The seven good cows, meaning the fat cows, Sheva Baros HaTamalid. You'll have seven daughters born. It's a good thing. Sheva Paros HaRaos, and then the lean cows, the seven lean cows, Sheva Baros HaTakover. You'll bury all of them. Next, someone else said, V'chein Amru, Sheva Shibalim HaTavos, the seven stalks, the healthy stalks, Sheva Malchios HaTamechabesh. You'll conquer seven kingdoms. Sheva Shibalim Haraos, the seven lean poultry stalks. Sheva Iparchios Mordos Bach, you have seven provinces that are going to rebel against you. Hadau Dechsiv, this is the Pasuk in Mishlei, Bikesh Leitz Chochma V'Oyin, the Leitz, the scoffer, seeks wisdom, V'Oyin, and is gone. Elu Chachmei Paro V'Chartume Mitzrayim, these are Paro's wise men and the prognosticators of Egypt. But the end of the pasuk, v'das l'navon nakol, but knowledge flows easily to the wise one. That's Yosef. Yosef understood. Okay. So on the surface, we have to ask ourselves a basic question as well. What did Yosef contribute to the interpretations that the Chartumim missed? What did the Chartumim say that was so wrong? Just like what Yosef said was really unprovable till it happened. So to a day, it's also approval till it happened. So why was Paro so quick to embrace Yosef's pshat, and equally as quick to reject the Chartumim Chachamim? So that Kipam Rucho, he was upset, and that's the pasuk. Vein Poter Tamu Paro, LeParo Paro. They're giving Pitronim solutions, but not to Paro. They didn't speak to him. Why did they speak to him? So you see the two major interpretations, the two genres we have here, represent classic attempts to take something which is superficial and perhaps satisfactory. It just like plugs a hole. You'll have seven daughters will die. Why didn't he accept that? Because Paro had a sense, Paro is a melech, okay? Vihine omeid al hayar. He's not only a melech, he stood over the Nile, the Nile was the source of their sustenance, He stood over the Nile like he was a god. So Paro envisioned himself not only as a ruler, as a king, but as a divinity. Okay? So Paro had a sense that these dreams spoke to his malchus, spoke to his majesty, was giving him something that didn't just affect him on a personal level. That's why the first pshat didn't resonate with him. You have seven daughters, this, that. It's too personal. It's power of the man, power of the father. So that he rejected. What about the second? The second was closer in that you'll conquer seven nations and then seven provinces will rebel against you. But that was also rejected because that's also personal. It has a national context to it, but it's also for Paro's own aggrandizement. He'll be a conqueror. He'll have to deal with revolutions. But that's also not Paro as a god or Paro as the head of the nation. He felt these dreams were so significant that they were giving him some insight into his governance, into the future of his monarchy. That's why he was unsatisfied. Bikesh leitz chochma v'oyin. The leitz has no chochma. Why didn't the leitz have chochma? The leitz is a person who doesn't really appreciate chochma. The leitz is a person who uses chochma for his own advantage. He's a scoffer. He's a mocker. He'll know something. He'll know enough to get by, but he doesn't really want to penetrate to the depth, to the substance of any matter. That's the leitz. That's the chartumim. They took what immediately presented itself, and they ran with that. You find a lot of charlatans are like that. There was a time, I remember on television, I was fellow conducting seances, right? Remember that fellow? I forget his name. I don't know what happened to him. Maybe he died. They got to resurrect him. But what he would do is he would just take, you know, words that people said or phrases that people would say, and he would lead up to it. And people, when they speak, whether in certain code words they use or body language, they're able to reveal a lot more of what they want to, a lot more than they think they are. Every psychologist knows this as well. That's what he took advantage of. So that's the chartumim war. That's leitz. A leitz just sees the surface. He uses enough information to make his point, and he calls it a day, moves on. But ultimately, that type of chochma is oyin. That's not real chochma. That's shallow. That's superficiality. But Yosef is v'das l'navon. Yosef was a navon. Rashi said this, the Torah says this as well. Ein chacham v'navon kamocha. There's no person as wise or astute as you are. That's Yosef. Yosef's pshat, Yosef's interpretation of the dream, spoke to Paro immediately, because what Yosef was saying to him is that this is a message. What God is about to do, that's what he's telling Paro. Your nation is going to have years of prosperity, but followed by years of famine. And therefore you have to prepare for it. And then Yosef, we'll see it a little later, on his own initiative, then presents to Paro instantaneously a whole program by which he could avert the disaster, the catastrophe to come. And that's when Paro said, Aloin no chachamin amok kamocha. In all Mitzrayim, there's no person like you. So that's the pshat. That's the difference in Yosef and the others. Yosef spoke to Paro as he saw himself, as a majestic figure, as head of a nation, as a divinity. The others saw Paro in one of the other hats that he wore, one of his other dimensions. Yes?
Yeah, so there's a clear sensibility here, because it was an agricultural symbolism in his dream.
And that's correct.
Bishara was the fact that it's an economic solution to what's coming.
Yes, and Vinei Omed Al Hayaor, that was the key.
Yeah.
That was the key, that everything flowed from that. Okay.
That was the bringer of sustenance.
That's right. Okay, next. Dover Acher. He calls all the Chartumim. V'odiach ha-shekalumo v'umo she'omedes ba'olam ma'amedes l'chamisho chachamim she'yishamshu osa. God gives each kingdom. Really, the Farshim say each kingdom that is able to rule over the Jews gives them at least five chachamim that will serve them. In other words, it's not the numb and the dumb that take over, that are able to prevail over Klal Yisrael. Has to be some chachma there. V'la'od ela nosan b'kadosh baruch hu shlosha dvarim. God gives them three things. Chachma bino gvura. wisdom, din is understanding, gvur is strength, might, bravery. Shekein Sancheir Varasha Omer. Sancheir himself said, Bechoach Yadi Asisi, I was able to do this. When he waged war, he eventually lost, but nonetheless, he waged war over Klal Yisrael with Koach, uvechochmasi ki nevonasi, with Chochman and Nebina as well. It wasn't just raw might. Sancheir used intelligence as well in order to conquer. Ukshakadosh Baruch Hu donas olam, when God judges the world, so he takes away this wisdom from these leaders. Shenemar, Pasuk in Avadya, Vavatig Chachamim Me'adom, I will cause the wise men of Edom to be lost. Utvuno Mehar Esav, I'll take away wisdom from Har Esav. V'chatugi Borecha Teimon, and the strong ones of Teman will be smashed. All right? What's the pshat? It's such a truism. Every dictator eventually self-destructs because they make terrible mistakes. There's it's a book I read over the summer. It came out, I think, a year and a half ago. The Storm of War by Andrew Roberts. It's a great story. It's a great book. One volume on the Second World War. And among the things that he illustrates is Hitler made at least 7 to 8 blunders in his conduct of the war, without which, you know, it would have been worse. Who knows what would have happened? And among the blunders, everyone knows of Dunkirk, he let the British escape. But among the blunders is declaring war on the United States. And he feels, and it's arguably true, Roosevelt, although he was planning war with Churchill, could not have gotten Congress to declare war against Germany after the Japanese attacked. To declare war against Japan. In fact, that was the, on December 8th, 1941, that was the resolution. To declare war against the Empire of Japan, not against Germany. But Hitler declared war on December 11th against America. And then Congress declared war against Germany as well. What a blunder, because he brought America's, not only industrial might, but the sheer numbers of soldiers that they had to bear on the European front as well. And just goes on and on. I mean, in the conduct of the campaign in Russia, when he started it, when he ended it, the fight to the death, they refused to surrender, just maybe 7-8 different blunders without which it wouldn't happen.
Well,
that's the pshat. Yes, that's true. That's correct. And something else also. Kshakadosh Baruch Hu donasa olam hu not lo mimeno. The Russia has his sway for a time, and he uses the chachma that he has, and Hitler machshavat chachma also, but then God takes it away from him, and they just act in unintelligent ways. And you see from the documents of the time now how much of his general staff was increasingly perplexed as the war went on by Hitler's military decisions. Even at a certain point in 43, which is long before the war ended, mocking him in private, because they knew that he was leading them to destruction. That type of tvuna, that understanding, is removed. V'kol kach lomo. So why in fact did God remove the wisdom from the Chartumim, that they were superficial and they couldn't really fully understand what was happening? Kol kach lomo. So Yosef should come in the end, and he should grab the greatness from himself. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. So God reasons as follows: Im yavoes Yosef trilo, the iftar sachalom. If Yosef is brought first, but the Sar Mashman said right away, don't ask them. I have a great interpreter sat with me in prison. Then ein ze shivcho, be no praise. Yicholim achar tumim sheomru lo, the chartumim then come and say, sure, ilu sha'alto sanu, had you asked us, kfar pasarnu oso, we would have interpreted the same way for you. Elohim tin lohem achi yisagu, lotzius rucho. So God waited until they exhausted themselves. V'achakach bo Yosef echziro. And then Yosef came, and he was able to restore Paro's spirit. Olav Shlomo, Olav Amar Shlomo, Kol Rucho Yotzi Chsil, that the fool exerts all his spirit, Elu chachmei paro. These are paro's wise men. V'chacham be'acho yishabachena. But the chacham from behind gets praised. Ze Yosef. Shenemar ein navon v'chacham kamocha. That's Yosef HaTzadik, who at the end was praised. They had to come first. What's the difference, by the way? You see, God gives even the Rishayim, who were able to prevail over the Jewish people for a time, Chachma, Bina, and Gvura. What's the difference in the three? A Gvura really seems to stand by itself. It doesn't necessarily relate to anything intellectual. Chachma is knowledge. That's the simplest one. Chachma really is raw data. Raw data comes in, right? Intelligence services struggle with this. The raw data today is almost infinite. You have to sift through what is important, what's not important. That's Bina. Bina is to know the difference. Bain davar l'davar. Bina is to know how to choose between options, how to isolate the wheat from the chaff.
Discern.
Discernment, correct. So Bina enables a person to choose options. Chokmah is the raw information. Bina is the ability to sift through what's important, to discern what's necessary to do, and what's gvura. To do it.
The strength
to do it, that's correct. To apply it.
Action,
that's right. Sometimes you know what to do, and you just can't do it, right? Well, whatever the reasons are. And that's where's Israel today? They're at the stage between Bina and Gvura, all right? We hope. Between Bina and Gvura. Because they know what has to be done, they know nothing's going to change. It's only going to get worse. And the question is to weigh the costs and balances of acting, not acting.
And when?
And then dealing with the aftermath, the consequences, the fallout from domestic politics, from the anticipated attacks from their neighbors to the north. There's a lot to deal with. But to make that decision and to implement it, that's Gvura. That's Gvura. They go together. So in fact, the Russia has Chachma, Bina, and Gvura, but then it's all taken away from you.
What is the word for courage?
Ometz is courage, and you find that word in the Torah also, in the Tanakh too. But Gvura here means strength of character. Yes?
How do we draw the line between the Emuna that Hashem can take care of it and flying around?
Yes, that's where we started, right. They work hand in hand. In other words, what the human obligation always is to do our hishtadlus, to as much as we can, to go through these processes of understanding the threat and calculating the risks and benefits of various options, and then choosing one and following through on it in the best circumstance. But ultimate success is ultimate success. That's what you need to feel.
What
did Yaakov do?
I'm saying this was really like, if you think about it, think about it in terms of Emuna and,
right,
and not having so much audacity to think that you can really make a change. I mean, they have so many things against them.
Yes and no. All right. So, you know, I mentioned last Monday night, lecture on the Six-Day War, great decisions. Rafa Leitan said after the war, he said, someone in heaven was looking after us, because every unexpected thing that happened was to the detriment of the Egyptians and to the benefit of Israel. And war is never like that. You know, you go to battle, so many things that are unanticipated happen. The battle plan lasts like, you know, maybe the first 10 minutes of the war. And after that, you're anticipating, by the way, that the enemy will respond as you war game it. But that doesn't always happen. So you have to be able to improvise. And then things go wrong. Logistics fail, right? You miss the target. Brigade is late in combat. Whatever it is. And, 50 different things can happen. I'm not saying that at all. Well, but saying that in that particular case, he said, all the things that you can't anticipate that can go wrong went wrong for them, the Egyptians, and went right for Israel. That's already Shabbat Shemaya, because that's not normal. And same thing here, you have to make the best decision. I can't sit here and say that they should bomb from the air and that's the best decision, because it's not like Iraq. Most of their reactors are underground, not above ground. It has to be done in a different way. That they have options, I don't know, I assume they do have options. That's why they're paid that big money to ascertain what these options are. But nonetheless, if you wait too long, like Begin knew this as well, very well, if you wait too long, and the plants become radioactive, then it's too late, because then you're killing thousands and thousands of people if you do bomb. So we've known for years already that crunch time will come. It's possible the whole thing could be averted if there's a regime change. Those things have been known to happen as well. It's not likely, but a lot of things are not likely, so we have to wait and see. But the main point is we have to use our chokhma, and then we rely on Sat Dishmaya. That's the methodology of Jewish life. So why in the end did the... Yes?
I have a friend whose son is in West Point, and I'm sure it's a now famous story, but he told me himself that they talk about the, you know, battle and how they planned and, you know, beginning war games,
right,
and everything. But he says, they say to their students that when it comes to Israel, there's nothing they can say to explain
that battle,
why they win. It's God. So.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to that.
In class, they said.
Yeah.
Right. They try to teach, you know, the planning for the Six-Day War and the execution of the battle plan, but so many circumstances were unique to that, you can't really draw conclusions from it. I mean, the bottom line is to win such a war in 6 days, it's not believable in the ordinary sense. It doesn't happen. And as I noted last week, Israel pays the price for that, you know, till this day. Because if a war lasts a week, Bill Thomas is saying, what's wrong with you? It should only take 6 days. Why are you taking a week? Certainly if it takes years. So they're not really equipped for protracted struggles. Okay, so why did the Sar Mashkim come around? Look at the bottom, Zion. Kevin Shero Sar Mashkim is parashay sanavshim ivakeshas latzeis hoye mechashe bedaita. The Sar Mashkim saw that Paro was so distraught. So distraught to the point that he was almost ready to give up his life. He started calculating the Sar HaMashkim, the Omer, and he said, "Im Yamus Paro Zeh, V'yam Melech Acher, if this Pharaoh dies and another takes his place, Ein Yodeh Im Ma'amideni Ve'um Unasiyim Lav, I don't know if I'll keep my position."
Right.
So therefore, this Paro was ready to he's so freaked out, he's going to faint and die from the stress. What's going to become of me? What do we start with? Lo pono rehavim, the arrogant self-interest. At the end of the day, the Sar HaMashkim did not save Yosef because he felt any gratitude towards Yosef. At the end of the day, it was all self-interest. All self-interest. So why, in fact, did he not want to help Yosef? We understand Yosef, Chazal criticized Yosef, but why did the Sar HaMashkim help him? And what was he missing? So Rabbi Chait said a very interesting thing, and that is that he might have until Yosef overplayed his hand. How did he overplay his hand? When he started into his history. Kidgunov Gonafti Meritovrim. I was kidnapped. Even here I'm innocent. And the Sar HaMashkim, who knew he was innocent, said, this is just another convict who thinks he's innocent. And the jails are filled with guilty people who think they're innocent. Once Yosef played the victim card, the Sar HaMashkim lost respect for him. As he was talking, as he was interpreting his dream, and he presented as a gavra, as a distinguished individual, the Sar HaMashkim thought, I have to reckon with him. But then he saw he's just another petty thief in prison, claiming his innocence, and the system is against him, and his bubby wasn't nice to him, and that's why he's sitting in prison. Lo zochar sar mashkim es Yosef ha'yishkachayu. He forgot him right away because he felt on his level there's nothing to talk about. He's no one. Until he realized, again, self-interest popped up and he said, now I need him and let's see what he could do for me.
Well, that's just all human nature.
That's human nature. That's correct. Look, the Torah is the greatest primer in human nature ever composed.
Well, his coattails is really...
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. That's what the Mishnah says, right? Hevizar, b'shlomo shel malchus. What does the Mishnah say? Be careful with the government. Shem akarvin adam ela. L'tzorach atzman. They bring people near for their needs and no one else's. Okay, three. Vayikra faro shem Yosef, tzafnas paneach. Paro gave Yosef a new name, Tzafnas Paneach. Safnas, like Safun from the Seder, Safun, something hidden. Paneach lefaneach, to open up what's hidden. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sfunos Mofia. He reveals, uncovers the hidden things, v'nochos lo le'amram, and it's very easy for him, very pleasant to articulate the things that he has to say. Reb Chizki amar, tsunos mofia, bidas, he reveals these hidden things with wisdom, with knowledge, meniach ruchon shobrias, and he puts people at ease. What's the difference, Rabbi Yochanan and Reb Chizki? According to Rabbi Yochanan, according to both, the name defined Yosef. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, the name defined Yosef in terms of his abilities, that he's able to comprehend things that are really indecipherable, truly hidden, and to reveal them, and to do in such a way that it's easy. The words just flow from him. So the name defined Yosef. According to Reb Chizki, true, tunas mofia bedas, but meniach ruchon shel brios. It's not just that he has the facility to say them, but he's influenced on others as well. He's able to put other people at ease, right? You could have a person who knows something, he's able to convey it, clearly, but doesn't put the listener at ease. Reb Chizki said he could put the listener at ease as well. And the Rabbanon darshaned every trait Yosef had, all good qualities. Safas panach, tzadi, sofer, he was a seer. Pei, poda, redeemer. Nun, novi, prophet. Tov, tomech, support. Pei, that's panach. Poter, a interpreter. Ayin, arum, here means clever. Nun, navon, wise, sagacious. Chet, chose, is a seer. Okay? And that was what the Rabbanon say, is that he had all the qualities, parason him, intellectual gifts, spiritual gifts, material gifts, personal goodness. Yosef had everything. Amar Avachon, a very interesting medrash here. Sunach Asriyeshkan, Basel Legalos Aleha, She'at Bino. Who's the Tzfuna here? So here the medrash, curiously enough, refers to a previous example of Yosef and hiding. What's the previous example? With his mother in Parshas Vayishlach, when the family was meeting Esav. Ksiv vatigashna shvachos, Shema Yaakov sent the shvachos and their children first. Vatigash gam Leah, then Leah came with her children. And then it says Vayosef achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel. Who went first? Yosef went before his mother. The others, the shvachos went first, and Leah went first. But here Yosef, Binyamin wasn't born yet, here Yosef went before his mother to shield her, to hide her. Amar Yosef, HaRasha HaZeh Eino Ramah. This Rasha, his eye is haughty, meaning he is licentious. He's a Baltaiva. So I'm going to protect my mother from him. Hide her so Esav does not see her. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ato hitznata le'imcha min ha'ayin v'igbata atzmacha. You hid your mother from his eye, Esav's eye, and you elevated yourself when you stood in front of her. Ani porea lecha umag biheka. God says, I'm going to pay you back and elevate you. Had God elevate Yosef? It says, v'Yosef ben shalshim shana, Yosef was 30 years old, when he stood before Paro, he was 30. So he stood before Rachel, protecting her. God paid him back. He stood before Paro. Now, what's the pshat? What's the connection between the two of us? Oh, that's very good. Mida can I get meat? In what sense? There's one quality that Yosef evinced very early in life: leadership. He took charge. He analyzed the situation and he put himself out front in order to protect his mother. And in fact, he did the same thing here. What did he do here? It's not just that he interpreted the dream, but he put himself on the line. Paro could have rejected what he had to say. Who are you, a prisoner, to tell me how to run my kingdom? Yosef put himself out front, and therefore he, the same leadership quality he evinced then, that came to the fore now. What's the point? We shouldn't think that the stories are unrelated, because the common denominator is that the fact that he stood up to Esav meant that he had the capability to stand before Paro as well, and that he had from his earliest youth. So it's not, the Medrash says that it puts it in the form of reward, like he's paid back for it. You have to redefine reward. What reward means, he has the same quality that he had that enabled him to do the former, enabled him to do the latter as well. And that's where we see it. In the former case, it was a limited incident, protecting his mother from his uncle. In this case, of course, it was a much grander incident, trying to establish the new methods of governance, of statecraft, for an entire empire.
How old was he when he stood in front of Leah?
Yosef, in front of Leah?
In front of Rachel.
In front of Rachel? I mean, when Esau came?
Yeah.
He was probably seven or 8 years old.
And Binyamin was born what?
He was 9 years old in Binyamin.
9 years older, so Binyamin wasn't born until 2 years later.
Binyamin was born 2 years later, that's correct. And Yosef at this point is 39 years old when he stood, I'm sorry, 30 years old, 30 when he stood before Paro. Okay, next, number four. So, in fact, it happens, the years of prosperity enable Yosef to establish his great storehouses and preserve the grain for when the lean years would come. The lean years do come. Famine's 2 years in effect, and then it comes to Canaan as well. Vayomer Yaakov Levanov, Lama Tisrael. Yaakov says to his children, why should you show off? What are you showing off? So Chazal say that Yaakov was never affected by the famine. They had a lot of money, they had a lot of grain. Amar Lohem, Yaakov said to his children, Al Totsiu Biedchem Prusa, or Prutos. Don't take out, don't show the Bnei Yishmael, the Bnei Esav, that you have, Prusa means Lechem, that we have bread. Or another gear says, don't show them that we have money, all right? Don't show them that we're well off. And when you go down to Egypt, Al Tikansu Kulchem Bepetach Achas Bepnei Ha'oyin, don't you all enter through one gate, one doorway, because of the ayin. What's the ayin? The eye of jealousy. That people will look. What are they looking at? What's the common denominator here? Historic message to Jews, in which we have almost always failed, don't show off. Don't show off materially, meaning if you have a prusa, if you have prutos, don't dangle it in front of others that we have and you don't. Don't flaunt our wealth, because it just arouses the envy of others. And Al Tikansu Kulchem BePesach Achas Mabnei Ayin. Don't show off either our strength as a family. Don't come as a large group that people think, you know, we're trying to take over the streets, take over the town. Be a little modest. Be a little restrained. A little humble. A little more reserved. Because we have all these qualities. And when we need them, we have to exercise them. But we don't have to exercise them. It's best just to try to get along, and that's it. The famous Kliyakar I've mentioned a few times in the second parak of Dvarim, where Kliyakar says that's the failing of the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Whenever we get money, we build big houses and fancy clothing. Could have said fancy cars as well. He didn't live in that era, though. And he lived in Prague. He said in Prague it's a tremendous problem. And all it does is arouse the jealousy of our neighbors, and eventually come to hate us and want to take it from us. And he said that's the story in generation after generation, including his own. Okay. So Yaakov sends his sons down. Number five, Vayakir Yosef es Echov Vehem lo hikiruhu. Yosef recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. How is that possible? Reb Levi Rabbanon. Reb Levi Amar, Reb Levi said, Bisho shenaflu v'yado v'yaka Yosef es Echov. When he fell into their hands, I'm sorry, when they fell into his hands, that he recognized them. And he did not treat them as harshly as he might have had he been vengeful. As opposed to Bisho shenafal b'yadom, when he fell into their hands, the Heimlo Hikiruhu. However harsh Yosef treated his brothers in order really to fulfill the will of Hashgacha, the family come to Egypt, etc., he still treated them as achim. He didn't punish them. On the contrary, he wined and dined them. V'heim lo hikiruhu, but they did not recognize him as a brother. That's Reb Levi. Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan say, she'hinichem b'chasim azokon, that he left them and he didn't have a beard. All right, he was only 17 at the time. He recognized them, they looked the same, they're older than him. He didn't look the same, he looked different, and therefore they didn't recognize him. What's the pshat here? Rablevi Rabbana? By Akir Yosef Esachov, Vehem Lekiru is a contrast between the way he saw them and the way they saw him. Rablevi says the contrast is in the mutual treatment, one for the other. It's a moral distinction that the Pasuk is making. They did not treat him as a brother, whereas he treated them as brothers, even Mitzrayim. Rabbanan say, no, the simple pshat is that the contrast is in the physical differences. That's why they could not identify him.
Vayomi Yisrael... It's all true with the whole story, with the whole scenario.
What's that?
Had they really thought of him as a brother, they would have recognized him.
Yes, that's correct. Well, part of it is they could also, you know, Chazal says, different medrash, that they went looking for Yosef Mitzrayim. They checked every brothel.
Right.
Because they assumed that's who he would be. Mm-hmm. And their wildest imagination, they never thought he would be in Pharaoh's palace. That's how they saw him. Really, that's the pshat. For Hamel Hikiruhu, they didn't recognize Yosef's real nature. Mm-hmm. That was a mistake they made
from the very beginning.
They didn't recognize his true nature. Look, he contributed to some extent, but nonetheless, they didn't see the real Yosef like Yaakov did.
Yeah.
They didn't see the real Yosef.
They didn't see the mouth.
So here too, that's correct. Vayomi Yisrael, so of course the brothers go, he treats them harshly, well, wines and dines, and gives them grain, returns their money surreptitiously, and then they come back to their father without Shimon, who's now in Egypt, and with the request of the mysterious viceroy of Egypt that they bring down the younger brother Binyamin as well, who, of course, Yosef assumed was not alive. Since they thought they killed him, at least dispatched him, so he assumed they would do the same thing to get rid of his brother from his mother Rachel. So then Yaakov says to them, Vayom Yisrael. Yisrael, again, is always Yaakov in his national capacity, not as a father of a family, but a patriarch of a nation. Lama hare osam li, why have you done this evil to me? To tell the man who said to you, do you have another brother? Why do you have to tell them that? Reb Levi b'shem Reb Chama Reb Chanina. Here's a beautiful, beautiful insight. Me'olam lo amar Yaakov vino davar shel batala. Yaakov never said anything frivolous, anything wasted, except here, when he said, Lama hare osem li, why have you done this evil? Why have you harmed me like this? Kach Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, so God said, Ani Oseg Lam Liches Benob Mitzrayim, I'm involved in making your son the king of Egypt. For who Omer Lama Hare Osem Li, and you're saying, why are you doing this evil to me? Hu the Omer Nistra Darki Me'Hashem. That's the pasuk in Yeshayahu. He says the Haftorah for Parshas Lech Lecha. That God's ways are hidden from us. So what's the pshat? The pshat is that to Yaakov, understandably, it was the worst possible thing. Loss of Yosef. Loss of Shimon. Now potential loss of Binyamin. You say to someone in that position, look at the bright side. There is no bright side. You can't see the bright side. But you always have to be able to see the bright side. There's always something at the end. The Chafetz Chaim said very famously that a person should never say, you should never say things are bad. You can't say that. That's what Yaakov said here. Lama hare osem li. You can't say things are bad. You could say things are bitter. Bitter. Mar. Bitter. Why? Because the bitter can become sweet. The bad is almost inherent. It means there's no good in it. But something that's bitter, or something that's bitter can only become sweet it could also be beneficial, right? Sometimes medication is bitter. It's beneficial. Sometimes the food is bitter. It's beneficial, though, as well. And people consume it, and they grow in health because of it. We can't ever say things are bad. That's an ultimate judgment. God says, I'm involved in great things, right? And last week, etc. God is creating the light of Mashiach, and everyone is complaining how bad things are. Sometimes you have to look up from the distress, even the distress of the moment now, and see that great things are happening, and be appreciative of it. Okay, Vayoma Yudah. So the story goes on. They go down to Egypt again. Binyamin is with them. Yosef can't restrain himself. He's crying, and he feeds all of them. And once again, he gives them grain, returns their money to them, and then adds a little catch. Has his goblet placed in Binyamin's sack in order to test the brothers how they would respond if the other Ben Rachel is caught stealing. By the way, see, he was very clever, of course, because what crime did Rachel commit? Theft. She stole her father's trophim, her father's idols. So brothers could have said, what are we going to do? It's in the genes. This is a family of sticky fingers, like the son, like mother, like son. That they didn't do that, of course, spoke well of them and how they understood. Vayomer Yehuda, at the very end of the sedra, Manomar l'Adoni, what can we say to our master? Let's get the whole pasuk. Manomar l'Adoni, what can we say to our master? Manedaber, what can we speak? Umanitz tadok, how can we justify ourselves? Hoelokim matzas avon avdecha, God has found the iniquity of his servants. Why the three expressions? And what's the iniquity that he's talking about? Note the Medrash. Manomal Adoni b'chesef rishon. How can we explain to you how we wound up with money the first time? Manadaber, what can we speak to you about kesef sheni, the second time the money was restored to us? Manitz tadok, how do we justify the fact that the goblet is in Binyamin's pouch? Okay, what's this? This is the brothers are saying to Yosef, there's something in their interactions that is strange, that all these things keep happening to them. So they're not right. It looks like they didn't pay. Looks like they didn't pay again. They should be more sensitive the second time. At least check to see if the money's returned. And certainly the goblet. So that's the brothers to Yosef. I just want to mention, the Minchas Oni says here, from the commentaries on the Medrash, that the three expressions in increasing order of
importance.
Not importance, but of harshness, uh-huh. Okay? Manomar, it's just they said. Manadaber, Dibur is always Lashon Kashos. It's to speak a little more forcefully. Mitztadok is to exert ourselves to find a defense. So manomal adoni bekesef rishon, fine. What are you going to say? Yeah, we don't know how it came about. So we say manadaber, you have to be a little more forceful, because if it happened once, you have to be on guard that it doesn't happen a second time. And they weren't. Manitz tadok, if they were to have to find some real excuse, real pretext.
How
it's possible? How do we plead? How is it possible it came to that? But these are the brothers talking to Yosef. Meaning, in terms of their relationship. Next, Manomal Adoni b'Masei Tamar, Manedaber b'Bilha, when Reuven slept with her, allegedly. Umanetz Tadok b'Dina. How do we justify that? Who are they talking to here? To God. Because they had these three incidents that are all justifiable in some sense, but nonetheless they don't look good. And they involve what might be otherwise construed as crimes or sins. They felt justified, but it wasn't as clear. So again, what's the clearest of them? Masei Tamar. What are you going to do? It was before Matan Torah. He was trying to help out, etc. Manadaber b'Vilha. So it was a little more serious. That Yitzchak, that Reuven interfered with his father's intimate relations with his wives. Manitz Tadok. the most serious of all of them is Dina. A lot of people were killed. Third, so now you have the brothers, you were talking to Yosef about their relationship, the sin, they may have committed the sins towards God, and not towards their father. Manomar la'aba sheberetz k'nam b'Yosef. What can we say about Yosef? Manadara b'Shimon. Manazada b'Vinyamin. What can we do? So now they're completely lost. Yehud is completely at a loss of how to explain what's happening here. Im no malucha chatanu, if we say we've sinned, so golavi adush lo chatanu, it's clear we didn't sin. They had no intention to sin, especially in such a way that it would be so obviously caught. Im no malucha shlo chatanu, if we say to you we didn't sin, Elokim matas avon adecha, God already knows. God has found our sin. What does it mean, God's found our sin? Rabbi Yitzchak, Motza Balchov Makom Likbosh Taro. Okay, it's a very interesting mashal. The creditor has found a place to collect. Mm-hmm. All right? How many times people have a judgment against someone, unfortunately, the defendant has no assets, and it can't be collected. I sat in the Torah once. We heard an hour's testimony from the plaintiff as to why the defendant owes him money. Should have asked one simple question before at the outset. When he finished, the defendant got up and said, every word this man has said, completely true. I owe him the money. I haven't a nickel to my name. I mean, not an hour earlier, could have saved everybody's time. But nonetheless, but you wait. You wait. Balchov is a shtar. Maybe the guy comes into inheritance. Maybe he wins the lottery that he can collect. Motza Balchov makom ligbo shtaro. Somehow, Yehuda says, we offended God, the creditor, and now he's come to collect from us in this situation in Egypt. Or, second shot, Rabbi Yitzchak as well, kazeh shehu mimatzeh sechavis u'ma'amida al shmoreho. Ha'alakim matzah esavon avdecha. So plain words, what does mimatzeh mean? To squeeze, right. It's as if you're squeezing the barrel, the dregs in the barrel, to get all the wine out. We're being squeezed, and all that's left now are the shmarim, the dregs, and that's us. That's what we're suffering. What's the pshat? God's justice is perfect. Mida keneged mida. Because now they have to think, if they go through the calculations that every Baal Tshuva does, what did I do to deserve this? Why is this happening? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Maybe I thought I was right. Maybe I thought I was right. I didn't do it in the best way. I helped someone. I didn't say the right thing. Every individual act is assessed and measured perfectly. That's Mida Keneged Mida.
But
they
don't address the issue with Yosef. They don't, at this point, is that
what you, they didn't count selling Yosef as one of their...
Yes and no, because you remember in our Sedra, Reuven, look in the middle of the Sedra,
yeah.
Reuven says, Aval Ashemim Anachnu Alachinu, Biraina Saras Nafsho, Schanoenu Velo Shamanu. They didn't feel guilty about selling him, but Reuven says we should feel guilty that our brother was crying for us for compassion.
Right.
We didn't respond. Felt again, it's tough love. That's what they were doing. They had to get rid of him. They thought they were right in doing it, but they felt they were not compassionate.
What it did to their father, they keep
that's
it
correct.
Back.
That's another unintended consequence. They thought the father would get over it at a time, and he never did. Never did. But what they first felt guilty about was a lack of compassion towards him. Not that they wouldn't sold him. That's ready. Next week's Sedra. Vayigash Yelav Yehuda. Then Yehuda starts in with the father as well. Finally, number 8. Vayomer. So Yosef ends the Sedra. Our Sedra of Miketz ends. Yosef says, Chalila le'masos kadavar hazeh. Remember, Yehuda said, take me. Let Binyamin go back to his father. Take me instead. And he says, no. Ho'ish Hashem nimsa ha'gaviyah biyado hu yeli le'eved. Yosef says that, no, we have a judicial system here, we're fair. The criminal pays for the crime. Now he can't send a substitute. Vatem, as for you, alulis shalom el avichem. You go back to your father in peace, and we'll deal with this here. Rabbi Yehuda b'shem Rabbi Acha, no'ar porpure. Yosef waved his royal cloak in front of them. And he said, Hoyesh Hashem imtzo b'Rabbi Abiyadar hu yeli oved v'atem alu l'shalom al avichem. And they said to him, Amorin le. They said to him, Hashalom t'chule nishpa. Is that really any type of peace? That peace, chule nishpa means that peace is eradicated. You're going to send us back to our father without the son Binyamin, whom he loves, the last reminder of his wife Rachel, and you think there's going to be peace in that house? That's not peace. That's a mockery of peace. That's a cynical type of peace. They say that, Ruach HaKodesh Sovachas, that God already, the Divine Spirit is screaming, you mention peace, you'll see what'll happen. Shalom Rav Lo Avesor Asecha. There'll be great peace to those who love your Torah. Meaning there'll be peace and reconciliation and redemption. Once Yaakov is brought into the mix, once Yehuda acts in a way that's completely self-sacrificial, once Yosef realizes that there's no longer any barrier between himself and his brothers, the unity of the family can again resume, the family's made whole, Yaakov, he could reveal himself to his brothers and to Yaakov, his father, as well. Okay.
Thank you.
I thank you all very much. Tonight. Tonight. Part 16. To drive on Shabbat. Great decision. The conservative movement, 1950, permitting use of an automobile on Shabbat. Look at that. Tonight, everyone's invited.